American songwriter, we had the opportunity to talk to Michael Bernard Fitzgerald over Zoom video. Michael talked to us about growing up in Canada, learning drums at a very, very early age, and guitar at a very early age. Picked up guitar at 7, ended up playing in cover bands, and getting his first acoustic guitar at 18 years old, and that's where it all changed for him. He recently released a new record called Love Valley. Check that out. And he did this amazing tour he tells us about during COVID. He made a tent, like a huge tent, decorated it, put a rad PA in there, and was able to sell tickets and tour with this tent safely during a pandemic. He'll tell you all about it. Check it out. Check out the video of myself and Michael Bernard Fitzgerald on our Facebook page and YouTube channel at Bringing It Backwards, and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. At Bringin' Back Pod.
We'd appreciate your support if you follow and subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're Bringing It Backwards with Michael Bernard Fitzgerald. Our podcast is all about your journey in music and how you got to where you are now.
Okay.
Did read you're from Canada. Talk to me about that. Were you born and raised there?
Yeah, so I was born in Ontario, which is towards the east side of the country, and then moved to Calgary, actually, when I was young. And okay. Then I've just grown up here I was gone for a brief stint. I went to Toronto for a bit, and I've spent a bunch of time in LA, but I keep on coming back here.
Right on. How'd you get into music?
You know, my dad, he's a drummer, and he wanted me to play the drums, and I wasn't the best drummer going, for sure. And so at one point, I think I was maybe 7 or 8, I asked for a guitar. I'd never played the guitar before, but I figured I wanted one. And I kind of just, went to guitar lessons here and there over the years, and then started making up my own songs in public school, and then just kept doing it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you said 7, you picked up guitar.
Yeah, although.
So when did you play drums?
Well, I mean, he had a little. He'd taken some of the smaller toms, and he'd made up a little drum kit for me when I was younger than that. And drumming's awesome. I mean, in hindsight, I probably would have stuck with a language, and I would have learned more instruments for sure. But I just, for some reason, was drawn to the guitar. I had an electric guitar first, and I kind of was half interested in guitar lessons always, because I just wanted to use different chords and things like that to just try to make stuff up. Mm-hmm. And then when I was 18, my mom actually had an acoustic guitar, and I started making songs up on that because a couple of my buddies at school were making up songs on acoustic guitar, and I wanted to try that. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know. That was a long time ago now.
So you never played in a band or anything prior to getting the acoustic?
Yeah, when I was younger, like in junior high school and high school, so grades 7 through 12, mm-hmm. I played in a pretty traditional high school rock band. Mm-hmm. And so did that. And I started learning how to sing too. I had a physics tutor, and I would drive my parents' minivan. At the time I had my driver's license, so I would drive back and forth to my tutor on my own. And that's where I learned to sing. I would just like harmonize with all my favorite
in the car?
CDs. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. And I feel like I've kept on learning how to sing this whole time. If I go back and listen to recordings, even from like 2009, I sing so differently now. It's like this ever evolving thing, which I'm grateful for.
Yeah. Well, you were making up songs on the acoustic at 18. When did you kind of start pursuing your solo career?
Well, so I was making up those songs, and then I figured from even playing in like high school rock bands that at some point, like you like have a show. Uh-huh. And I knew I wasn't interested in doing like a open mic, or interested in doing like a jam or something. I wanted to do my own thing. So I called around and found a venue, and essentially had like my own show and had tickets. And
oh, wow.
Yeah. And just did it that way. And I liked that. And so I kept on just trying to find shows after that. And then I was also going to university at the time, and the shows just eventually got better. We played like a better club and then had a better night at the club and then wrote more songs and recorded more songs. And then it just kind of, it honestly just evolved from there.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Like I can remember, yeah, I can remember being like in, I can remember chasing down, you know, like talking to one of my favorite like punk bands in town at the time and finding out which places they like to play and mm-hmm. who the promoter was there and just kind of hounding those people down until I had my own show. And that's kind of how it all began.
Wow. With that first show, was that pretty intimidating? I mean, calling the club, getting your own date, you know, getting a date and then trying to sell tickets and then having these people show up and you've never, was that your first show?
Yeah. I mean, that would have been my first acoustic show, I guess. Like I would have played shows before, like we would have done Battle of the Bands and stuff like that when I was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And like done like coffee house kind of things too.
Okay. So that wasn't your first like experience on stage in front of people.
No, but it was my first time being the only person kind of driving the night, I guess.
Ah, was that different or did you?
Yeah, for sure. That? Like, I mean, I think being a singer songwriter, the advantages, you know, the decisions can be pretty easy to make. You know, you have a kind of a panel of one making a bunch of those calls over the years. But when push comes to shove in a moment like that, it's just you, you know, like you're on your own a bit. So, mm-hmm. But it was whatever it was. I mean, it was a taste enough that I wanted to keep doing it. So,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And from there, you got the bug and you wanted to keep going. What was the next step up for you? Did you put out a recording or you were talking about going and recording more songs and getting in bigger shows? When was the first time you were in the studio and put something out?
So during that same kind of period of time, I'd gotten one of those at the time they were making those like digital recorder, like boxes. It was like a mixing board with a little screen.
Oh,
kind of an all-in-one thing. Yeah. And so I rented one of those from the music store in town and just recorded a bunch of songs in my room at home. And
oh, wow.
And then I started asking around town to see if anyone could, you know, mix and master those recordings. And so I was introduced, this is like 2000, I'm dating myself here. I was introduced to this guy named Josh Gwillem in 2005.
Okay.
And he had me come to the studio on off hours. I'd usually show up there at like 11 o'clock at night and he would help me mix and master these little songs I'd just made at home.
Oh,
and
wow.
I started like stamping, I found like a stack of blank CDs, like no writing on them. And then I got a company to make me like a Quatra ink stamp.
Mm-hmm.
And I went and would burn copies of it and stamp them.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And started selling them out of my bag. I'd sold them out of my bag at school. I sold them at that first show. I sold them at the shows around that time. And then Josh, the same engineer producer, I asked him, you know, like how it worked, like what was the next step? And he said, like, you know, the next thing would be to come in and actually get studio time and record something in a studio.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the time he told me that, you know, that and then pressing some CDs, like actually getting someone to properly manufacture them would be, I think it was like $6,000 or $7,000 back then.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have
$600 or $700.
Yeah. So I was still in school. And so I went down to the bank and I just told them I needed a student loan. And so for tuition. And so they gave me a student loan like that day. And I spent it the next day. Like I spent it the next day and got that studio time. And that was my first experience in the studio.
Oh, wow. Well, and then you put a record out from that.
Yeah. And so I pressed 1,000 copies of that. And again, sold them out of my bag. And started playing shows and started playing more shows and started playing better clubs, like clubs where people would discover music at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Here in Calgary. I like even thinking back on that time, I was so stressed during the studio days, right? Because I had no experience with the studio time at all. And then you have this distinct feeling that the clock is running, especially when you've just taken out like a student line of credit to pay for it. And so sure. I remember being so stressed at like smoke breaks and things like that, being like, we got so much to do. Like,
yeah, time is money. Let's keep going here. Smoke on your own time.
And I just was so stressed. Like, it's, and then like, you know, having meeting all these musicians and having people come in, and someone came in and played drums on this, and someone came in and played a horn on that. And it just ended up being such a fun time. I mean, at the time though, it was such a learning process. You get those final recordings back and you think, oh, like it didn't turn out exactly what I was thinking, or like, oh, I wish I had done this better. Or you have that. I can remember being so immersed in that and feeling so bad.
Yeah, just going back and being like, I wish I would have done this differently or this differently. But again, if you went back and did all those things differently, I'm sure you'd still hear 10 more things the next time you listen to it that you'd want to change.
Yeah, and you know what? And especially while making this most recent album, mm-hmm. you come to realize like, hey, I mean, I've been at this for a long time, and you come to realize that not only every song and every recording goes into, like, that's all part of the timeline that affords you the ability to do what you're doing now, mm-hmm. right? And that frame of reference to write this way and record this way now. And I also think all of the industry ins and outs along the way, they totally inform where you're at as well. You know, like, I think you can't have one without the other. So mm-hmm. I definitely look back fondly on all those times. And so we finished that one. I started playing these shows. And then I asked Josh again, like, well, what do I do next? And so, and he said, well, we should try to record your songs with some musicians in Nashville. Like, we should try to see what that's like. And so again, I committed to money I just didn't have. And we, we got in my Honda Civic at the time, and we drove across the border to Billings, Montana. Uh-huh. Or we attempted to, like, the alternator went on the way, had to get towed into Billings, missed our flight. Got the airline was like, they were sympathetic. They put us on the next day's flight. We got to Nashville, got to this studio called Dark Horse, and recorded with these like Nashville session musicians. And it was awesome. It was such a cool experience watching these people. This is my first time really watching these people that, you know, number one, they'd have like a cartage person bring in their amp or bring in their drums and set it up perfectly for them before they arrived. And then get there, you have them for 3 hours and you're thinking, what are we going to do in 3 hours? And then they listen to the song once, they play it once, they play it twice, and you're good. And the next song, listen once, play it twice, we're good. Like, wow. We just churn through these songs like that. And I remember being so mind blown. And then we came back to Canada and finished that up. And that's when I really was like, I guess I was really starting to think that I wanted to do this like full on. And so I was chasing, I think the clubs that was kind of picking up steam still, but then I started chasing down like a local indie radio station, mm-hmm. and they ended up playing a couple of the songs, and we won one of these radio station contests, and that got us on stage at this thing called Virgin Fest up here.
Oh, cool.
And it just started going like someone in the newspaper wrote about Virgin Fest, and then I got a call right after that to sign my first deal.
Wow.
And it just kind of like, it all kind of kept on falling into place like that. And I still was operating off that same line of credit from
student loan. That's awesome. You said you got your first deal after playing that show or playing the Virgin Festival. What mm-hmm. what was that like? Was it one label or multiple people trying to reach out to you? And tell me about that process.
So it was a small indie, and I remember at the time I knew nothing about deals or lawyers or, I mean, you know, as much as I might have changed my vocal take in that first recording, I definitely might have changed my strategy on how to hire an attorney at the beginning. But this, it was like an indie label, and they had my favorite band. They had this band that I was like, that was, I not only looked up to, but I'd like both in the city I was going to school in, and then also in my hometown here, Calgary, like I had fought and vied to be opening up for them whenever I could. Like I just love what they did. So I thought, okay, I was in good company, and at the time it was distributed by EMI.
Wow.
And they had a good relationship with EMI. And so, and that was like, then I got my first agent, and started, well, and I had already been touring. Like I started touring in 2008. So I'd already been touring a bit, but it was all around the same time. Got my first agent, mm-hmm. started playing more shows, getting more opening slots, playing in other cities more often. And then that's when I moved to Toronto for a winter, because their relationship was so good with the people at EMI. I would basically just go hang out at their office whenever I could. Like I'd go over there a couple times a week and say, what's up? And then play a residency and make sure all the EMI people were coming to my shows. And that was kind of that Toronto chapter.
Wow. Okay. And you were already touring prior to moving to Toronto, you said a little bit.
Yeah. Like I did my first cross Canada tour in 2008, and it was self-booked.
And was it just you cruising in your Honda Civic across the country, or like, how did that work?
No, that radio station contest was like $15,000. And so I went and bought Josh Gwillem. Again, he gave me advice, and he told me to buy a van and the trailer. So I bought a van and the trailer. At the time, we were playing with most shows, we were just playing with four people. There was a person that played some guitar and some keyboards. There was a drummer, and there was a bass player and myself.
Oh, so you toured like with full band. I wasn't sure if you just toured as with an acoustic on those earlier ones.
I mean, I would definitely do some shows acoustic, like some of those opening slots and things like that mm-hmm. were acoustic. But when we were touring, at the time, the Calgary shows were starting to pay decently because we had the draw was growing. Mm-hmm. And so I would just use those shows to help kind of offset the cost of taking a band across the country.
Oh, okay.
And I would just kind of hedge Calgary against the rest. And that started kind of the touring phase of my life. Like at that point, we toured Canada at least once a year, period. Like until now. Like I actually toured this year. So yeah, realistically, until now. Wow. Yeah, it had so many different iterations. There'd be one tour we took like for a few years, we had a horn section. We had like two trumpets, saxophone, and trombone. For a few years, we had like three backup singers. For a few years, we had two drum kits.
Wow.
Yeah, it was like so many different setups over the years.
And yeah, and you've put out what, four full-length records?
I'm not sure.
I think you've done four. At least from my research, you've done four albums. That's pretty impressive. Yeah, I mean.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I am. And I was, there's a couple of years in there too that I was really obsessed with making live records too. Like I thought that was just such a cool way to capture something like that. So we did two full-length live records somewhere in there as well.
Wow. And what were like when did you start really seeing the shows get, like you talked about, you know, you going back to your friend and asking for the next bit of advice. Like once you get in the van and you have the trailer and you got the band and everything, like what was the next level? Did you go back at that point and say, hey, like now what do I do?
Well, like there's a couple moments. And so I played like 85 shows this year, and the format of the show was all solo. Right. And so I had a lot of time to think about all these kind of moments and stories over the years. And there was two kind of moments that really set it off for me at that time. There was a club in Calgary that's now closed due to the pandemic, but it's called the Hi-Fi Club. And I wanted to play there so bad. And I remember calling one of the guys that was a promoter there. And he told me that if I wanted to play the club, I'd have to come to another bar that he promoted shows at and come play an open jam. And so, and I remember saying to him, and I don't know where I got this confidence from, but I remember saying to him that I wasn't interested in playing jams. Like I wasn't going to do it. I wasn't up for the jam. So, and then he said, okay, well, that's the first step. And so he said, and I said, okay, well, I guess I'm not doing it. And he goes, okay, well, I called him. So he's like, thanks for the call and whatever. Yeah,
see you later.
And so I remember sitting there being like, what did I do? That was so silly. And he called back 15 minutes later and he said, listen, we got like an opening slot on this date if you want to try it. And that started my whole relationship with this Hi-Fi Club. And I remember getting off the stage the first time and he booked us again for a second show before we'd even left the club. And I can remember being in there one night. This is maybe like 6 months later or a year later. I can remember I was playing. And up until that point, you know, you'd invite family and friends. You'd make sure that you'd kind of stack the audience or at least pepper in like a couple people. You know what I mean? You played some pretty empty places at the beginning. And I remember looking out at the crowd and not recognizing anyone. And it was sold out. And I didn't know anybody. And I can still remember that feeling. Being like, oh, wow. Okay. So what is happening here?
Right.
And then I just kept on chasing bigger venues and I wanted to put together some of these epic, shows. Mm-hmm. And so I did a show where we had, five drummers and a choir and a small orchestra. Whoa. And dancers and all these people on stage. There was like 100 people on stage and we played like a 1700 seat theater here in Calgary and sold it out.
Whoa.
And that was kind of the next night that and that was 2009. That was the next night I realized that my agent at the time had flown up from Vancouver and I was signed to that label and they were there. And that was the first time like having my parents in like a green room and thinking, okay, maybe there really is something here.
Mm-hmm. Wow. 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 And you were the conductor of that whole crowd of people. I mean, 100, you said five drummers on the stage.
Yeah, there's five.
Oh, how did you even arrange that?
We would just, one of the guys in the band, this guy Andrew, he had access to a bunch of rooms at the university in their music program. I think he just ended up, you know, he kept his keys after taking maybe a bit of a leave from the program. So we just had access to these rooms. And we'd go and rehearse and I think what was cool is that we were pulling off something so neat that everyone just wanted to be a part of it, myself included. So we would just go and make these rehearsals happen and just try to figure it out as we went.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And you have a new record out. You just released this last year, right? Love Valley.
Love Valley. So I guess on the 9th, it's been out for 3 months.
Okay. And you, yeah. But you talked about playing like 80 shows last year. How did that happen?
Yeah. So, finished the record, finished tracking, I guess, right at the beginning of February, tracking and mixing. So like pretty much, and then I guess mixing went through February, but basically just before things locked down here in Canada, the mix was done and it was already sent off to mastering. Which is awesome because I was part of the mix in person this time. Like I think lots of times as an artist, once it gets to the mixing, like it's just like an email back and forth and like notes kind of process. But this time I was there for the whole thing.
That's cool.
Which was cool. It was my first time doing that and I loved it. And the mix took probably a month. So it took some time. And then we sent it to mastering, things locked fully down in Canada. And then, so I started calling everyone I knew in the industry, both people that I work with and people that I used to work with and haven't worked with yet. And I just wanted to gauge everyone's opinion on like what it was going to be like in 2020 to release music and how the pandemic was going to affect it or, you know, like just what people thought. It was such a mixed bag of information, but in the end I decided to kind of stick to the schedule I'd already mapped out, which was it was three kind of single releases. Mm-hmm. Or focus tracks, really, they're not like proper singles, and then the album would come out in October. And so mold that around for a bit, decided to do that, and then started like just not necessarily knowing how I was going to get from A to B, but I just started hiring like a team. Mm-hmm. I started hiring like a team that was a bit in the US, a bit in Canada, and a bit in the UK. and just kind of went forward with this plan. And I knew with the style of music and the way that record kind of the whole thing feels like a bit of a mood. I wanted to tour it differently. Like I'd already been thinking about touring in a different way, not necessarily going to traditional venues, but to kind of create a space and to kind of take that from city to city in a uniform way. Like usually when you're touring, especially at my level, you know, every club and every night in that club from year to year and tour to tour is so different, right? Like there's no uniformity. Mm-hmm. And I thought, how neat would that be if you could kind of create a space and every night people got to see the same thing. And so I was thinking about that, and then everything set, you know, the pandemic set in, and that was definitely off the table. But then the idea kind of brainstormed around a bit, and it ended up being this like event tent, a 10 foot by 20 foot event tent that a festival in town lent me. And I set it up on the parking pad in my backyard.
Oh, wow.
And we decorated it. We put a wood floor in it and these antique chairs and dried flowers and like Edison bulb lights and a little PA.
Cool.
And then partnered up with a restaurant in town so that anyone that came to these shows could order like pizza and wine.
Oh, and from the local restaurants and bring it in. That's so brilliant.
Totally. And then I played to one cohort a night. And so I thought this would be like maybe an okay idea. I put 14 of these one cohort shows up. So basically if your group would have to be already in contact, uh-huh, and we'd sell you the tickets to come, and it had to be minimum 4 people.
Oh, so interesting.
And so I put 14 of these shows up on my website, and they sold in minutes.
Whoa.
And I figured that they might sell over the course of a few weeks, and maybe I'd have to take a couple down. Like I didn't know how it was going to go. So in the end, we released more, they sold out, released more, they sold out. Finally, when it was all said and done, over the course of the summer, I played 58 of these shows in my backyard.
Oh my gosh.
So every night there's people walking down my alley. Every night there's the pizza delivery car dropping off pizza and wine. My neighbors loved it.
Were they down, the neighbors?
So down. The neighbors on the one side had like some chairs at the back of their yard so they could kind of tune in when they wanted to on the other side of the wall.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and then the neighbors on the other side couldn't hear it in their yard, so that we actually added a show so they could come.
Oh, that's awesome. Hey, we've been doing this for a while. You have? Yeah, come on over.
Yeah.
I'm looking on your Instagram. Is this tent what you were playing in? Or am I looking at something different?
Well, the backyard, we called it Summer Nights, and it was that 10 foot by 20 foot tent. But then because it was going so well, I ended up buying a 20 foot by 40 foot tent and another bigger PA.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And actually, and we loaded that all up in a truck and a travel trailer.
Uh-huh.
And then I toured the bigger tent and actually set up on 26 farms across the country. And we did a show for 5 cohorts. We would distance 5 cohorts in that tent.
Wow. That is awesome. How long did that process take of taking the tent down and setting it back up and packing it up? I can imagine that being quite a nightmare.
It was all I can say is I had an idea of how long it would potentially take, and it dwarfed that. It was 2 of us, my partner and I, that ran the tour.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, like, a Canadian drive is longer than an American touring day for sure. We just have longer time between places,
cities.
And all the farms were within 45 minutes of city center. That's how we sold it all, and all the tickets sold. Like, I mean, when I put the tour up, all these tour dates, 60% of the tickets sold in like a day.
Wow.
Yeah. And so we would drive, let's say you drive for 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
We would set up the tent. The tent would take 2 to 3 hours to set up. the shows, all the backyard shows and all the farm tour shows were all 2 hours long.
Wow.
And
if
then
the money's worth then, huh?
Well, and it was just like, it ended up being, especially this, like this past year, like it ended up being such a positive way to spend an evening, right? Like you get,
sure,
you get to have like a show and the PA sounded great in the tent, but then in between songs, people felt way more comfortable just asking questions. Uh-huh. And so you'd go off on this tangent and be talking, someone had a question or they remembered a night that they came to the show before, or someone, and you just kind of, the whole conversation would just spill over too. So the show would go 2 hours, and then taking down the tent would take 2 or 3 hours. Mm-hmm. Then we'd go to bed, wake up, send like a couple emails, get in the truck, drive, set up the tent for 3 hours. Cause we, there was 5 shows a week.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So it was a daunting task for sure. And then we had to make some changes. Like at that point, areas of Eastern Canada had already shut down. Mm-hmm. So we had to postpone those dates. So there was a bit of that kind of thinking on the fly, but we ended the tour off with 2 shows in Vancouver. And that took us right to, so I basically started playing shows. I feel like it was like June 2nd.
Wow.
And played straight through to November 1st.
That's amazing. That is really cool. Cause not many people, if any, were able to do anything in that time period.
Totally. It was, obviously we had to earn our way into that party for sure. But
the way you guys went about it was brilliant.
It ended up being so cool.
That's such a cool thing. Like, I mean, and your fans must have been so stoked. I can't imagine going to see one of my favorite artists in a little tent and being able to just throw out questions at them, like in between songs. Like, oh, hey, I remember when I saw you play that in, 2002. Like, how cool is that? That must have been such a rad experience for your fans.
Totally. And it was such a great way, like, it was a great way to touch base with people that had come to the shows before. And then a lot of times people, because we can only sell tickets in groups, a lot of times people were bringing kind of new people to the show as well. Right.
Mm-hmm. So right.
There was a nice mix of that.
That's cool.
And also I found too, like people that like had maybe had come to a show in like 2010, 2011, this was a reason that they felt to come back. You know what I mean? Like maybe they hadn't been to a couple of shows or they'd missed a couple of tours but then they came to this, which was really cool.
Yeah. Wow. What an intimate experience for any, listener or fan of yours to be there. That's so cool.
Yeah. I thought it was awesome. And then we came back and we set up actually another little venue space. And cause I wanted to learn all these years traveling and touring. This is my first, like last year's my first year not being on, being in LA a bunch or being on a bunch of flights. And so I wanted to kind of, I guess, re-meet the scene of people making music here in Calgary. And so we did a bunch of, we did this thing called Love Valley Guest House. And it was, again, 5 nights a week. And every night I'd go song for song with a different local artist.
Like you would play their song, or you'd play a song and then they, you'd play a song, they would play a song, you'd play a song and kind of go jump back and forth.
Totally. An audience of 5 cohorts again. And then basically on the stage, we'd be distanced and it'd be 2 singer-songwriters. And so like, and it was such a great way to like see what else was going on here in town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you could kind of trade songs and ask questions of that artist and the audience could ask questions and stuff like that. And we go back and forth. And so we did that for a bit. We had to postpone a couple of the dates because we just wanted to kind of be timely with everything going on, but mm-hmm. we'll pick those back up in the next bit here. And, but yeah, I think though, all in all, I think like, I'm sure it took me to like 100 shows.
That is cool. I mean, wow. What, and you guys, or you obviously came up with, like I said, a brilliant way to do it and be safe about it.
Yeah. I mean, that part took a lot of work again. Like I did, my partner and I, we just figured out, there's a lot of thinking on the fly to kind of figure out, okay, well, how are we going to make this work? And how you get from A to B and how do you set up a tent? And, you know, like there's a whole bunch of things we had to figure out as we went. So,
yeah, totally. Well, I'm glad you're able to, you know, promote the record in some sense of the word over the past, you know, few months. You said it's been out for 3 months now.
Yeah. On the 9th, it'll have been 3 months exactly. And
so were you
Christmas...
able to play those shows in between then?
Well, so October 9th, we were still like for the rest of the month of October, we were still on the farm tour.
Mm-hmm.
So I was still playing. And then November 1st, that guest house started and we took that right until, I think we took that to mid month.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then I've been like, I guess off since then. I've been like looking at writing songs again. And then there's been some, it's also been interesting lately with like kind of, I haven't chosen to do like a full on streamed ticketed night.
Mm-hmm.
I just figured like if I had like an idea of how I wanted to approach that, I would do it. But until then, I didn't want to go in. I didn't want to step into that space unless I knew that I had an idea of how I wanted to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's actually been these awesome requests that have come through to do a streamed show, but for a specific group. Which I thought's been, yeah. I thought it's been awesome. So like a company because they can't get together and they wanted to host something for their employees. They host like a Zoom party.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah. And so I've done a few of those, which is like over the last month here. And that's been fun too. Totally different. Like it's actually, I set up in this room. Like this is like my den here at the house and basically am playing to like a private Zoom.
That's cool. Then do people like, are they, you know, are they all just sitting on their Zoom call, like staring at you or like, are they mingling with and doing like kind of listening? Like how is the vibe?
It's funny. Like every time they start, I'm always thinking that's just, it's such an interesting environment, but you have it on gallery view.
Mm-hmm.
And at first it's like a little, it feels like a little clunky and like everyone's trying to figure out how to do it. And then, but
everyone's
then eventually
like,
but eventually like, you know, you end up just playing a tune and then someone asks a question or someone cracks a joke or, and it just like each time I think I'm going to be on the Zoom for like this much time. And each time it's been like,
way more.
Not much time. Yeah, which is cool. Like it's I've said from the onset that like I wanted to do those tent shows because I like being in the same room as people, but mm-hmm. but I mean if people are connecting through Zoom, then great. Like that's like there's no such thing as like a wrong way to connect really. So
sure. Well, I'm glad you're able to play some shows. Obviously, there's a lot of them last year and hopefully more this year once everything hopefully opens up and you're able to actually promote your record quite a bit. I love that. And I appreciate you talking with me today. Thank you for being so flexible with the time and everything.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me. Where are you, by the way, in the States?
San Diego, California. So just south of L.A.? Like on the border of Mexico.
Totally. Yeah. There's a club. I can't remember what the club was called. I played a club in San Diego one time. There's a few years there. I toured the States a lot.
Huh. Was it a bar or like a all age venue?
Yeah, it was a bar, and it was like long and narrow.
Was it by the airport? Or no?
Could have been
long and narrow. Long and narrow. Was it the Casbah? I mean, that's the big one, or the. I'm trying to think.
I'd have to look it up. It maybe fit like 100 people.
Okay. Maybe there's a few clubs that have changed the name about 10 times, so it might have been one of those bars.
Sure.
But that's awesome.
Yeah, no, I've been to San Diego a couple times and I was spending a lot of time in LA there for a while.
That's cool. Yeah. Well, we're moving to Nashville. So you talked about recording a record there. So have you had a chance to play there?
Yeah, I have played there a couple of times too. I was signed to CAA as like my US agent for a while. And I was signed to the Nashville office.
Oh, wow.
So I would spend a bunch of time there. And like as a writer, like I would try to mix in a Nashville trip every year or every couple of years to go down and just and just because I'm signed to Warner Chappell as a writer, so
they'd
set you up on like a co-writing trip or whatever. So
that's awesome.
That was always fun. That's yeah. Really so what's cool. taking you there?
Just life. I mean, we just want a change. We're our podcast is through American Songwriter, so they're out there, and I just keep everyone I've talked to that's out there is keeps saying it's amazing. So we just want to check it out.
Yeah, that's cool. That's a great reason. You know, towards the end of Making Love Valley, I made it with Josh. And he and I knew that we wanted to get a couple like cool guest instruments on the record. And so we flew to Nashville. This is right before the holidays last year.
Okay.
We flew to Nashville and drove to Memphis and recorded saxophone in Memphis. Wow. And then drove back to Nashville and recorded pedal steel in Nashville. And that was like my last real flight.
Wow. How far was it to Memphis? Few hours.
I think it's only a 3-hour drive.
No, that's not bad. That's yeah. cool. That's awesome. That is really yeah. cool. Well, yeah, man, we're really excited, and knowing that you're on Warner Chappell, next time you're out in the States, especially in Nashville, we'll come check you out.
Yeah, for sure. And like, yeah, I'll just keep in touch as we figure out how to, you know, when we come back to the States, and if I can bring that tent down there or what, like we'll just figure that out. But
yeah. I'd love to see the tent.
It's yeah. I mean, there should be pictures of it somewhere. I'd be happy to send you some, but it was like,
I think I saw one on your Instagram, unless that wasn't the right tent. It was looks like a pretty big one, and it's all dark and like people are walking into the tent.
Yeah. That'd be the one, I think.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Routine. Are they a part of it?
Yeah, they were.
Okay.
They were.
I think I'm looking at the tent.
Yeah. So it was, it took a long time to set up, but it was well worth it.
Yeah, it looks really rad. That's
yeah,
cool.
It was cool. It was totally cool in there. Well, so you're moving right away?
Not right away, but within the next few months. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Awesome.
Yeah, man. It'll be exciting.
And I see a record player behind me, so send me your address so I can mail you a vinyl too.
Oh, awesome. Thank you. That'd be so yeah. awesome. Will you sign it for us?
Yeah, of course. Of Hell course yeah. I will. Yeah. Yeah, no, I'd love to send you one. So just let me know where I can do that. I think it takes a little bit of time to get it to the States right now, but.
No, dude. Thank you. I'll definitely do that. I'll send it to you right now after the call. I have one more question for you before I let you go, though.
Okay, sure.
I want to know if you have any advice for aspiring artists.
You know what? I think in keeping with our conversation, I think I just said even twice, but I think that it's good to, it's really good to be open to change, you know, like it's any kind of change. I mean, like you can accidentally miss a song on a set list, you know, playing a club, or you can have the club closed down because there's a international pandemic, or there's just so many different things that can kind of dot your path as a writer or a musician or an artist. So I think just like being open and even embracing that change, I think would be kind of, that'd be the advice I'd give.